Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our Reedley City Council special meeting for Tuesday, December 4th, 2018, and called our meeting to order, and we'll have roll call, please.
Councilmember Back?
Here.
Councilmember Fast?
Here.
Councilmember Pignon? Councilmember Salino?
Here.
Mayor Bettencourt?
Here. Okay, and today's special meeting will include, it's a workshop from the Reedley Economic Development Action Plan Study Session. Barry Foster?
Yeah, so Mayor, as Barry's coming to the front to the podium, and I mentioned to him that we do record, so he will have to be at the podium. Let me start off by thanking the council for being here during a special meeting. I know several of you have employment that you've left to be here. And I appreciate Barry coming all the way up from Southern California on what will end up being probably a very rainy drive back, so we wish you the best in there. Mm-hmm. We've invited, obviously, the exponent and staff to be here as well through this session, and the EDC is represented here as well, Jacob in the back there. As you know, we're vital members of the Five Cities Partnership for Economic Development, which is actually seven cities and the county now. And I did meet with Leanne Eager, the CEO of the EDC, to really explain that every city needs to have its own economic development action plan that focuses in on the unique nature of the city and what its challenges are for economic development. This by no means is trying to circumvent what we're doing in the five cities or what we're doing regionally, but each city has its own unique needs and circumstances. And so this today workshop, Mr. Beck and I were talking, we are so excited that we're finally here because as our rep on the Five Cities Board, he and I have had many, many conversations about economic development. And this really will start us off in what I believe will be a plan that will get us closer to where we want to go with economic development and see the growth in specific places we'd like to see in our city. Mm-hmm. So this is a study session. This is a workshop. There are no votes required here. And as far as I recall from conversations with Barry, this is an interactive workshop. So you have questions, you chime in, and he may have questions of you. While Robert's Rules of Orders are in effect because it is an actual official meeting, it is a workshop. So we're a little more fluid and casual. That being said, because we are a little more fluid and casual, we do have danishes and coffee for anybody in the audience and up here who'd like to go partake in that. And if we end up running a little long and need a break, please speak up and we will do just that. So, Barry, given that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Nicole. I appreciate you having me here today. And as Nicole said, this is really kind of just the kickoff and we're going to kind of go through a little bit and talk about economic development before we go off and draft an economic development action plan. And I've been doing action plans for quite a while. And as Nicole talked about, it's a little bit more focused in what we're doing. It's very specific to your community. And back when I worked for cities, we did a lot of kind of grandiose strategies, very thick documents that kind of sat up on the shelf and really weren't useful. And so when we do an economic development action plan, it's for a shorter period of time. It's more focused. It's for a three-year period of time, looking at what the marketplace is, where the economy is, and trying to focus on a number of key initiatives that we think make sense to try to accomplish during a shorter period of time. Just a little bit about my background. I worked for 23 and a half years for four different cities in Southern California in development services. My last one, I was the community and economic development director for a city of about 200,000, and retired from the PERS system and worked for a number of developers, and HDL convinced me to start up a new division in the company to work on economic development. And so I've been doing that for about 4.5 years. We've done work for about 65 cities. We're currently working for about 36, 37 cities throughout the state of California. So, and I've got a staff of three, and we're getting ready to actually hire a person that's going to work out of out of the Bay Area, and we have an office in Pleasanton, and just to help a little bit more with Northern California. When I worked for cities, I helped facilitate about 30 million square feet of development. Since I've been working for HDL, we've helped facilitate probably another 3 or 3.5 million square feet of development. So pretty experienced in looking at development and lots of different kinds of development. So today we're going to talk a little bit about what is economic development. We're going to talk about a economic development strategy, what the city's role in retail recruitment is, some of the motivations that cities have and property owners have, looking at kind of a snapshot of the Reilly community profile, looking at your strengths and your weaknesses and opportunities and challenges. Take a look at the top 25 sales tax producers in the community currently. Talk about a consumer demand and market supply assessment. And then talk about some areas that we think would be good to focus on in terms of areas of opportunity. Talk a little bit about development services, and then touch upon what we're going to be doing with that three-year economic development action plan. And then talk about some next steps. So there's a lot of different definitions of what economic development is, but this is one that I like to use. And it's efforts to increase economic activity by strengthening your existing businesses. And that's really, really important. I think sometimes cities focus too much on attracting new things, and they forget to focus on what they have. And sometimes they lose some of that. So I think you really need to look at your existing business community, making sure that you're helping them too. It's attracting new businesses and creating employment opportunities. You want to be that well-run community with a daytime population, and then rooftops too. You have to have a balance with jobs and housing. And then just trying to make the environment as good as it can be for business to succeed and to flourish, and that helps the city. There's a number of factors, and they include jobs created, income generated, marketplace growth, increased sales, which leads to increased local revenues. Sales tax is really important for cities in California. Our company is one of the leading sales tax consulting companies in the state. We've been around, we're celebrating our 35th year. We do work for probably 400 cities and counties in California with sales tax. So we really understand the sales tax aspect. And again, it's trying to have that healthy business environment. When you're looking at an effective retail development strategy, you're looking at it at a number of different things. And you're looking at what the city can do and what role the city plays. And you really want to take the lead and lead that effort. And it's really understand that a lot of it comes back to being market driven. You've got to be realistic about who you are and what you can be and what you can go after. You want to facilitate the development process. You want to make sure that you have an effective land use policy. You want to make sure that when you do have businesses that want to do things, that you're able to fast track those approvals and entitlements and make sure that process is consistent. Mm-hmm. And then you want to just make sure that you do everything you can, to make sure that you're creating that really effective business climate. So what is the city's role in retail recruitment? A big part of what a city needs to do is define and manage expectations. So you want to make sure that your land use policies are proper and your guidelines are proper. And you want to confirm what your trade area demand is, what you have, but more importantly, what you don't have and what you can go after. You have to work with property owners. I think lots of times the community forgets that when you're trying to get something, that cities typically don't own those properties. And so you've got to work with those property owners, whether it's an undeveloped piece of property or whether it's a vacant building. Somebody else owns it, so you're helping to facilitate that process. You're telling that story, you're painting that picture, but you've got to work with those property owners and making sure that it's a team effort. And it doesn't work unless you work with them. You want to really understand the market analytics, and it goes beyond just straight demographic reports, how many people you have, average household income, average age, ethnic makeup. It gets into more looking at daytime population, rooftops, segmentation profiles, consumer demand and market supply assessments, what you have and what's leaking outside your community. All those things really kind of make up in telling that story. and painting that picture when you're trying to attract new retail to your community. And you have to have a vision. And that vision really is, what can you do and what do you want to do? Again, just a little bit more in terms of what the city's role is. As I said, you need to understand your trade area and those market analytics and how they affect what you can go after. The next step that we'll be taking after the action plan is, and actually probably concurrently with that, is we'll be doing a void analysis to figure out what you don't have here and what's possible. So we're working all over the state with a lot of different folks, and so we know who's doing deals, where they want to be, what kind of trade areas, what kind of markets they want to be in, who's expanding, who's not expanding. And so we're gonna come up with a list of possibilities that we think make sense for Reedley. And so we're gonna look at what's missing, and then most importantly, what's realistic. What kind of fits with your community, with your market analytics, with your community makeup, and those folks that are there doing deals and where they want to be. When you look at motivations, it really runs a little bit different. The city has certain motivations and the property owner has certain motivations. The city wants to have retail and restaurant concepts that make sense for the community. They certainly want to create retail opportunities for their citizens, the people that live in the community and visit the community. And you're trying to attract retail for long-term success. And cities want to create revenue opportunities. They want to create new sales tax. It's really important to fund general fund services. That's always been an important part of California cities, is creating sales tax revenue. And it's attracting tenants that will fit into your shopping areas and into your retail areas and allow for that future growth. Property owners look for things a little bit different. Now, they look at vacancy rates. They look at what kind of rent they can produce. They're looking at hopefully attracting a tenant that will sign a long-term lease. And a lot of property owners are looking for somebody that can move in with no tenant allowance, you know, move in ready. And so sometimes those are challenges, especially when you're talking about more national or regional users. Now, they're doing deals all over, and oftentimes they have an expectation that they get some tenant allowance, and that's very typical. You know, whether it's $10 a foot, $15 a foot, sometimes $20 a foot, but that expectation for those national people is important. And the national people from a property owner perspective, the reason they like national people is because they have good credit. So they typically don't close locations where, like, the more the mom and pop, they may have one location, and so they don't have that stability. And so credit is really important. If you're going out and you have a building, you have a tenant coming in, oftentimes you might have to go out and borrow to make some improvements to that building. And so when they go out and they're trying to finance it, they're looking to see who the tenant is. And if it's not a credit tenant, it's more of a challenge. And so you have to have a balance of that. Just a kind of a snapshot of Reedley and your community profile. So we looked at some of the kind of the top categories in terms of demographics, and we looked at the city of Reedley proper, and then we looked at a 10-minute drive time, and so it goes a little bit beyond your community, and typically, retailers and restaurants are not looking just within city boundaries. They're looking at a trade area. And sometimes you may have a location on the edge of your community and you're going off into the next community. You want them to be here, obviously, but they're looking at trade areas and looking at making sure that their customers are within that trade area and that they can be successful in what they do. So you can see the trade area with a 10-minute drive time, which is kind of a typical drive time. A little bit more of a population, so you're pulling a little bit greater area than just your community. So here it shows the population, shows the households, shows the percentages of owners, renters, white collar, blue collar, and then just the makeup of your ethnic makeup.
I have a question.
Sure.
On the Reedley thing and then the trade area.
Sure.
You have Hispanics going from 75% to 21%. I don't think that's accurate.
That's a mistake. You're right.
I think it should be the other way around.
Yeah.
So the 19.
I think a number got transposed there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm sorry. We'll go look at that.
Okay. Thank you.
And then kind of looking at some of your strengths and opportunities and weaknesses and challenges. I think you have a very nice downtown. And so a lot of communities want to have downtowns. You have one. A lot of people try to make a downtown. And sometimes it just doesn't work. So I think having an established downtown is certainly a positive and a strength. But downtowns are different than some of the retail environments. They have different types of users, different types of businesses that want to locate there. And so it's kind of, I've worked in a lot of communities where, you know, downtowns, you really are trying to establish the foundation for that community and looking at design guidelines and having the infrastructure in place so that when businesses come in, they're able to flourish. And so, downtowns are a little bit unique and a little bit special.
And our businesses downtown have worked really hard to work together.
Yep.
And to make it work.
Absolutely. And I think
many of them do struggle, but they've chosen to be here and they're part of the community and they give a lot to the community.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate.
And businesses that go in downtown are they're different. They're unique but again I think making sure that that foundation is and the environment is as well as you can and put it in place to help mm-hmm. them succeed. Mm-hmm. There's other things that you can do like that rather than just provide some economic incentive. It's trying to make sure that the environment is mm-hmm. as good as possible. Mm-hmm. You've got the college here. And I think a lot of communities would love to have a college here. I think that's certainly a strength and mm-hmm. and an opportunity. And so I think having that is important. Just the agricultural business, I think that's certainly key in this whole area. And so I think that's a strength, and you need to acknowledge that. In terms of weaknesses, probably the most obvious one is you're not on a major freeway. And so you just need to acknowledge that and you need to accept that. It doesn't mean that you can't be successful. It's just you need to do things a little bit differently. And so I think some of the communities that, as I've gone up and down the 99 that are located on freeways, I don't think they take advantage of it. So I don't know that it really is helping them. I mean, I look at some of the stuff that they have on those freeways, it's not that impressive. And so I think a lot of them have missed the boat in terms of what they're trying to do there. So, I think it's good to be located on a freeway. It's not an absolute. So you just look at things mm-hmm. a little bit different. Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing though, we do have the 180 is coming out closer to Reedley, and that has made it a lot quicker to get out here
yep.
and also to get to Fresno or
yep.
Clovis area too.
No, I think it's easy to get to those kinds of locations, and I think you have a good location. It's just you have to acknowledge that you don't have freeway frontage. And again, I don't know
true.
that's
yeah.
critical. I think that probably the most obvious thing that I saw, and when I talked to Nicole the last time I came up here, is there's not a hotel here. And so I think there's a real opportunity to do a hotel mm-hmm. because of what you have already. Mm-hmm. And we're involved in probably 5 or 6 hotel projects right now. I mean, California, the last 2 years have been record years in terms mm-hmm. of hotel development in California. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do a hotel market study here. I was up earlier today and in Galt, we're doing a hotel market study there too. They have a couple hotels, but they're looking at a couple more. I think it's just taking advantage of that marketplace. And I think cities focus so much on trying to create sales tax and that kind of revenue. A hotel is even better. I mean, with a TOT rate, mm-hmm. if your transit occupancy tax, with a mid-price limited service hotel, you know, you're talking about $285,000 to $300,000 in revenue. Mm-hmm. That beats any kind of a box, an anchor box that you might get, except for maybe a Walmart or a Target or a Costco or something like that. I think hotels are a revenue producer, and I think it fits really with what you have and what's going to come into this community. So I think there's a real opportunity there. In terms of your top 25 sales tax producers, I know this is hard to read, but you really have kind of a mix of national and regional businesses, along with a lot of local businesses, and I think that's a good thing. But I think there are some opportunities to do some more with some of those national and regional players, and a lot of those folks are businesses that we have relationships with, and we're looking at a lot of different opportunities throughout the state with cities that we work with. If you look at your top 25, it represents almost 63% of your sales tax revenue. So again, I think it's trying to bring in some more and diversify that. I think it's good to bring that number down a little bit. If you have one of those that close on that list, it has a little bit more of an impact. Mm-hmm. And you've got one on that list that is going to close. So I think it's kind of understanding with the factories to you, Follas is going through bankruptcy and is going to close all their stores. And so when we saw that, I actually sent an email to Nicole and just said, you know, that's, while you don't like to have that happen, that's an opportunity too, and to figure out who you can put back in that box. And that's the environment today in California is retail is just constantly changing and staying up on it and figuring out, you know, if you go back and look 5, 6, 7 years ago, some of the really highly sought after retailers are no longer around. You know, the Linen things, the Mervins, you know, Toys R Us, all those, a lot of those folks, they were kind of the darling of retail. And they lost their way. Same thing with the restaurants. There's a lot of restaurants that are no longer around. And so, you know, you need to look at that and understand that. But that's opportunities, is you need to face that and understand that and figure out who you can put back into those things. A big part of what we've done is work with cities to take those kind of opportunities and reuse those spaces. We've done a lot of work with former Kmarts, where you go back and help split it up and put in productive uses again. That's it's just a reality. It's not going to change.
You know, Barry, while you brought up factory to you, I think it's a really good example or a good question point. I'm not sure how to pose this. The mayor and I were talking when we heard that it was closing. That for us, we have a large population here that's low income, and that store was important to that population. Mm-hmm. I think if you were to look at the Reedley community, you're not going to see that this average income is the majority of Reedley. You're going to find we have low income, we have high income, we have some medium income. So how does a city market? Do they market to the low-income folks that truly need something like a factory to you to shop in? Do we try to bring in, you know, we have lots of people who would prefer to see that we bring in something like a Costco and a, you know, kind of a higher level store, et cetera. So looking at filling that factory to you spot and knowing that we're talking purely fictional scenarios right now, because obviously the property owner is going to have a big hand in what goes into that store. What does a city try to market to? The low income need, the high income want, what is that?
Yeah, well, I think you need to look at what your community is and what your demographic makeup is and go after retailers in those kind of categories. But then look at who's looking at trade areas and marketplaces like this. You know, your comment about and whether you want to call them discount retailers, I think they prefer to be called off-price retail, and so it's there's a lot of those are the people that are actually doing deals, whether it's it's Ross Dress for Less or Burlington Coat Factory, and then they don't call themselves Burlington, they don't call them Coat Factory anymore. It's Marshalls, it's those kinds of off-price things. And so it's looking to see, you know, who could fit into that box and who's not here and who's not in this trade area, and then look at putting together a match.
Barry, I've got back on part of the deal was that no major highways are in our area. And one of the first things, anytime you have somebody that comes in with economic development, the first thing they want to know is where's your nearest off ramp. And I have to tell them mine's 12 miles away. And where do we go to get this change, the attitude of the larger companies, the people that can supply retail to us? How do we go about changing their mindset that, because the state, you know, itself is also trying to shut down the consumption of fuel so you don't drive as much. So we have to look at a little bit shorter area. And I noticed you had an area like within 10 minutes is 33,000. I really believe that's off. I believe we have more than that available, because I can drive further in 10 minutes here than you can in Fresno. I think you reach more people out here in 10 minutes than you can really realize. So how do we change these retailers and these manufacturing's mindset that because you set off the freeway that you have something to offer them here?
Well, I think it's telling that story and painting that picture to them and showing them what you do have. And you just have to acknowledge that you're not on a freeway, but you need to talk about some of the other positive things, that you have a college with all the students that are here, and just your daytime population with what you have here. In terms of the 10-minute drive time, our software defines what that 10-minute drive time is. It's not me, yeah, or you, or it's, you know, maybe you can drive faster than I can, but it's I don't think so, but I drive a lot, but it's the software defines that trade area. And so but I think it's looking at what you can get, and you just need to be able to understand your strengths, but you also need to acknowledge some of your weaknesses and some of those challenges. And so I still think there are opportunities that you need to have to be at an off ramp. I think it's looking at what you have here and all the positives that you have here. And I think you have a lot. It's just making sure that you're telling that story properly and painting that picture. And a big part of what we're going to do with the consumer demand and market supply assessment, which is actually the next one, is we're going to, as we look at what people are spending their money on within your trade area and what's leaking out. And so that red number, from a city manager perspective and from a city council perspective, is that's lost sales tax revenue, because people are not able to get that in your community, and they're having to go outside of the community to get that. You know, I always look at that as the glass half full. That's opportunity. People are spending their money on those categories, but they're not able to spend all of it within your trade area because they don't have the opportunity, or they don't have the stores, or they don't have enough of those stores. And so they're having to go outside someplace to spend that money. And again, that's looking at opportunity. That's looking at demand that's not being realized. So that's a big part of what we're doing is looking at consumer demand and market supply assessment.
So we have an interesting situation that occurred a couple of years ago here, Barry. We haven't had a chance to tell you about all the ins and outs over the past decade or so of what's happening in retail here. But, you know, 7 or 8 years ago when most of the team started, we took a look at that and we saw there was a lot of leakage in appliance sales, for instance, you know, the Best Buys, the Sears there out in Fresno, Clovis. And so we heavily, heavily recruited Sears out of Selma, and we were able to get them to move. They left Selma, they came here. They only stayed open for about a year. And so there, I think there are many reasons why they didn't stay open, whether it be landlord issues and location issues, or simply sales issues of people here. Maybe they were in the habit of going elsewhere. How do we ensure that we're not just looking at leakage going after those and having that occur where they leave. Because I think that was a tragic story for Reedley. Yeah. We were so excited to get Sears here. We were so excited we were going to capture that leakage area. And then it didn't work out for us. So is that something that we should have or could have foreseen?
Yeah, well, I think it's looking at what's leaking out and what those opportunities are too. But then I mentioned earlier, you also have to look at who's doing deals and who can be successful. There's a lot of categories. Appliances is a good one. People are buying more stuff online for appliances and just having them deliver it to you. And so I think, you know, appliance places, furniture stores, this is on the list here, but I wouldn't be put too much of an emphasis on that too, because furniture stores just are they're not doing a lot of deals right now. So it's looking at who is doing things and what those best opportunities are. And so I think it's really a mix of, yeah, you have leakage, but electronics is another good one. Is there's not any electronic stores that are really expanding at all. And so, because most people are just buying stuff online. Mm-hmm. So it's realizing what's really realistic and attainable.
So how do we get an online vendor here to promote, to do something like that? We have a lot of big empty buildings from cold storages and packing houses.
It's understanding who could fit, and that could be a part of it too.
And frankly, I think one thing that Barry and I and other city managers are looking at, there's a bill that keeps kind of getting kicked down, you know, the can gets kicked down the road in Sacramento, that would change sales tax to point of destination, not distribution. Mm-hmm. Huge game changer for little cities like us, where we have a majority of our population is getting their things via Amazon and they're getting them delivered. Mm-hmm. We would see our sales tax go... I'm watching Paul's head, and I'm surprised it's not, like, bobbing up and down. So cities Dinuba mm-hmm. are challenging that. Mm-hmm. They do not want to see that pass. Mm-hmm. Cities like Reedley are trying to get it to happen, and the legislature is not happy with the conflict, and so they keep kind of pushing it off to the next year and the next year. But I think that's where we wouldn't necessarily have to recruit online retailers mm-hmm. if we can get that law passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And our company is very, very involved in sales tax, and so that's a big part of what our company does. And so, you know, there's a lot of things being looked at and making things more equitable. And there certainly is going to be changes, but there's winners and there's losers, and so there's always that conflict and trying to understand mm-hmm. that. I think over the years I've been involved in four different transactions with Amazon and done probably over 4 million square feet of Amazon facilities, a couple when I worked for a city, and then a couple more since I've been working for HDL. It's interesting because Amazon doesn't do point of sale in California. Just because of the way they formed and did business in California. So if you're a city and have an Amazon facility, you don't get point of sale there. The county gets it, and so it goes into the pool for that county. So I did two in Riverside County for a city. It goes into Riverside County. It's split up then on a per capita basis. But there's a lot of things that are being looked at and how sales tax is being looked at. So I talked about focus areas of opportunity, and these are kind of our thoughts on what makes some sense. And so we've got we have downtown as one focus area of opportunity. And I think that's a given. It's looking at kind of the Manning and Buttonwillow area, and that area around there. It's looking at the Upper Bridge and North Reed Avenue area. And then I think another area of focus should be Reedley College, and looking at how you can help them grow and expand. And mm-hmm. I think that's really an important part. Mm-hmm. Education in a lot of communities, it's education and healthcare and medical mm-hmm. is really important. And I think mm-hmm. so. I think having that is really important. Mm-hmm. And then light manufacturing and logistics. And so I think it's just kind of understanding those things. It goes beyond just retail, mm-hmm. looking at other kinds of things that you can do with job creation and trying to make yourself a well-rounded community. And And I think it's really important for cities to just to be proactive with development services. And I think from what I know, and I think Ridley does a very good job of that, just continuing to embrace that and make sure that you're doing everything you can to help with development services. It's making sure that from the city council down and to work as a team to make sure that you're business friendly and that you really have a can-do attitude. You know, I think a lot of cities talk the talk that they're business friendly and they fast track, but you really need to walk the walk. And so I think that's really important to make sure that you're doing all you can to be successful.
And I think we're pretty good at that.
Yeah, and again,
I see a good core staff, and the information I've gotten from businesses coming in has been very positive here.
Absolutely, and I think just making sure that you continue to do that and stress that, and I think it's when you have standards and especially development standards, it's making sure that they're consistent, that you're doing that. You know, you're not fudging things for one and then you're telling another one you're doing something different. It's being consistent. Mm-hmm. And I think you do that, just making sure that you do that. You know, back when I worked as a community economic development director, I started with 95 employees and I left. I had 65. We had gone through the recession. And I tried to always instill that upon, you know, being consistent and making sure that you're doing what you can, and treating them as clients. You know, when you're new development, I used to tell planners that used to work for me, if we didn't have people wanting to do that, we wouldn't have a job. Mm-hmm. And so you need to be treat them as clients.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And making sure that you've got that excellence in customer service, and I think you have, and it's just continuing to pursue that and do that. And again, I think it's a shared vision with city councils and staff, and you know, understanding their roles and responsibilities, but working together as a team, I think that's really, really important. And I think, you know, bottom line is you want to just make sure that Ridley is the best place to do business. And again, I think a lot of cities talk the talk, but you need to be able to walk the walk. So, an economic development action plan. It's not this grandiose strategy. You know, it's more like 25 to 30 pages, and it's more focused on action. It's trying to look at what you can do during a shorter period of time. It's recognizing the marketplace, understanding that your trade areas and your market analytics, kind of who you are, what you can be. Identifying near-term opportunities. And then we're going to establish some goals and objectives that can be accomplished within a three-year time frame. And then we'd like to see us come back about a year and a half into it and see how you're doing. And I'll see if there's some things that you weren't able to do, or maybe there's some things that came up you didn't think that weren't available then. It's making sure that you can be a little bit corrective and make sure your plan really is working. So next steps, I'd love to get some feedback from you on what you heard today and what you want to see in this plan. And then we're going to go out and we're going to draft a three-year economic development action plan. And then we're going to bring it back to you and get your thoughts and have it be considered for adoption. We've done probably 12 economic development action plans the last few years. And we're working on probably two or three more right now. So they're all a little bit different, but there's some things that they share too. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'd like to somehow incorporate more of the ag, somehow market ag tourism our area.
Yeah, we'll have that as an overall goal too.
I think that's will be an important piece for our city.
I have a question for you, and sorry I was late. My name's
sure.
Frank Pignon. In the process of assessing and laying out the the process of finding out where we stand in every aspect of business, economic development, the process, are you able to tell if a city is walking the walk, talking the talk and walking the walk in that process? And if so, how long does that process usually take?
Well, I think part of that is gaining feedback from the people that are doing business here. It's your existing businesses. It's developers that are looking to do things, or that have gone through the process. It's getting that feedback. And I think, you know, what I mentioned earlier too is just, you want to make sure that you're not focusing so much just on attracting new, is making sure that you're keeping what's here. And so I always advocate, and it'll be one of the things that we'll recommend, is that the city manager and maybe a couple of key staff members meet with your major businesses, your major sales tax producers, your major employers in terms of jobs on an annual basis. I think having that feedback, if you pick the top 20 to 25 or so, and you meet with them for an hour once a year, that's a huge investment, and that reaps a lot. When I worked for cities, I always did that. If somebody makes a decision to relocate to another city or close down for whatever reason, 99% of the time, once they made that decision, you can never get them to change their mind. And that goes from big businesses to small ones. So I think it's having that dialogue on an ongoing basis is really, really important. And it will really, really help you. And so sometimes it's something that can be corrected. And it's you know, it's access to a business, it's a median, it's whatever. And maybe there's some things that you can do differently to help them, and where they don't have to make that decision that they've got to move someplace else or they've got to close or whatever else. I think it's just, that's an investment, I think, that will reap a lot of benefits. So I think it's just gaining feedback from people on an ongoing basis. And that's how you really kind of determine how well you're doing.
So kind of having somewhat of a relationship.
Yeah.
It's relational.
And I think a lot of cities forget that and don't focus on that. And I think that's an advantage that smaller to medium sized cities have, is it's a lot easier to do that. You know, I mean, everybody's busy, but you need to create that time and make that investment, because it will really help out.
Thank you.
I have a question. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I just.
What is your opinion of putting together a group of local folks to keep a pulse, to feel what they want, what they see? Because 90% of your people that do businesses in your community knows what the other one is doing, and gives you a heads up if you have a business in trouble or is looking to go. What is your opinion on something of that nature?
Absolutely. I think the more interactive, collaborative things that you can do, the better. Another thing that, besides just the visitation programs I talked about, was you can have business roundtables. We used to have them once every 6 months, and you invite in some like kinds of businesses. You could have one for the downtown, and just getting that feedback, I think, is really, those are the kind of things that we're going to have that are not unique to a certain area, but really they're community at large. There's a lot of things, I think, that cities just kind of lose sight of that they could do to make the environment even better. And that's really what you're doing, is you're trying to make sure from a business standpoint, from an economic development standpoint, you're doing all you can to make this the best environment possible. And so it really is just investing some time and getting their feedback. It's really, really important. I think it's getting that from those businesses on a one-on-one basis, or even in a group setting. You don't want to hear it from second or third time, and everybody puts their own spin on things. And so I think hearing from the community is really, really important.
Well, all I can say is people are frustrated because we had a chance to bring in a Walmart. And because there were certain individuals in this community that didn't want that, businesses that were afraid of seeing Walmart come in, they convinced one council member at that time to vote against it, and that killed the project. So what's the city really doing? Losing a lot of tax dollars to a neighboring city that has a Walmart. So, but we tried to keep the sales tax here. We lost it. And that's hurt the city of Reedley. We have to convince the people in Reedley, the ones that are negative about bringing in new businesses, that we're trying to do what's best for the community so that we can have business that's going to accommodate the public. Plus, in the past, which is, I think it's improved now, we had the agencies here in town that just didn't see eye to eye and they weren't communicating with each other. So, and I think it's starting to change. I don't have to name the agencies because we know who they were. But I think what's this economic development project here is, if we follow the right road, I think we can improve in certain areas. The biggest hurdle for us is the property owners. Mm-hmm. It's not that we haven't tried to bring in businesses. Businesses have come in, talked to business owners, and they've walked away. So that's the hard part. We haven't heard anything about industry. Is industry good for the city of Reedley? That would create jobs if you could attract an industry here. And of course, there's property, industrial property to the south of the city, but that's owned by different individuals. The city missed the opportunity years ago to own that property. We were trying to keep it a secret because the city was healthy enough to buy the property. And it got out, and different individuals went and bought the property. So that's another hurdle, trying to work with property owners. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, hopefully. Mr. Salino, I'm so glad you brought that up. I had a question here I was going to ask Barry about industrial versus retail, because I think very frequently when the community asks the council about economic development, their thought process is simply a retailer. Mm-hmm. And industry is so important in our industrial growth, and we have very few vacancies in our industrial areas of town, to the point that we have a food processor that wants to come in right now. They've got a company in Africa, a company in New York. They want to be here in Reedley specific, and we have been unsuccessful thus far in finding them a location. And part of that problem is most of the vacant properties have gold mines underneath them, I like to say. Right? So I do think you're hitting a really important point for our community. Economic development is not solely retail, mm-hmm. and property owners play the key role. I think mm-hmm. the city has to do a lot to facilitate. And Barry, I'm looking forward to your advice to City Hall, city staff, myself, mm-hmm. and what we can do. Mm-hmm. But there will be occasions where we simply will not be successful because I think the hotel that came in here, that came three or four times, that wanted to be here, is a great example. They wanted a very specific one or two locations in this town, and those one or two locations, they couldn't make the deal work, and so they're not here. Mm-hmm. So Barry and I, when he did come previously and toured around, I asked him about interactions with property owners, and I think he's got some really good ideas for city staff in what we can do. I will be glad to hear if on this top 25 and beyond, if there are some property owners or some store owners that we've kind of left off, because as I was viewing your list, I think we've got some pretty solid relationships with a lot of these, if not all of these. I think your advice and interaction and facilitation with property owners is going to be a key piece of advice that staff is looking for.
Yeah, just to point out, light manufacturing logistics will be a part, it will be a focus, and I think that certainly is an opportunity, but obviously you need to be able to work with property owners and be able to make a transaction work. But working with property owners it's not unique to Reedley. We face that in every city. Every city I've ever worked in and every city I've ever worked on as a consultant is something that you just need to continue to work with them and show them how it can work for them, but how it can work for the city and the community at whole. And so I think it's a process. You just need to keep working at it. You need to keep you need to keep that dialogue going and showing them that you can work together as a team and make things happen. That's, again, it's they own the property, but oftentimes, you know, if it's undeveloped property and it's been sitting there for a long, long time, you need to show them why it makes sense for them to do something, why that land value is not really market relevant. And sometimes you have property owners that are their family trusts or whatever else, and they've owned a property for a long, long time, and sometimes you need to find developers that maybe are willing to go in and do a joint venture project with a property owner. 10 years ago, very few developers did joint venture projects, and I work with a lot of developers throughout the state that are seeing that as a way to get things done. Sometimes when you have an older retail area, an older shopping center that maybe has lost its way a little bit, and that family trust that's owned it, they may be the third generation, you know, property owner. They bought it from somebody who developed it originally and it sold to somebody else, and they see income that's steady, it's coming in. It's sometimes finding somebody that can come in and help energize it and bring some different and better tenants, provide a facelift, make it more productive. Something you can have a developer that comes in and is able to work with them where they're doing the work. The family trust maybe is throwing their center in the property in, and the other entity who's maybe a little bit more skilled at making the project work, repositioning it, bringing in better tenants, all that, they're doing the work and they're paying the fees and everything associated with that. So it's a good marriage. They're trying to make things happen. And so I think that's one way that we've seen it in Galt. We have a developer that who I do a lot of work with in Southern California, but they also have an office in Sacramento, and they're looking to do some more. So there's two sites in Galt that they've tied up property with and looking to do joint ventures with property owners, longtime property owners, to try to make it happen. And they also do mixed-use developments. And so sometimes you can do a mixed-use development where you can do some residential, and you're helping kind of subsidize the commercial. Because right now it's pretty easy to make money as a residential developer, but again, you need to have that good mix, and sometimes that's how you can make a project pencil. But it's joint ventures, it's mixed use, it's all those kinds of things. I think that you just need to be creative. You need to think outside the box, and sometimes folks don't do that.
I'd like to say that, you know, I've always been impressed with our staff. One of the things that I actually was one of the determining factors in my research before becoming part of the city council was, you know, each department, they seem to be very proactive at what they do. And before something takes place that could have been detrimental or something that could have hurt or been negative, they're looking for ways to prevent that. And I really appreciate that about our staff. And I'm really looking forward and very interested to see what would happen. You know, first of all, we have Reedley College, we have the river, we have so many entities here in town that can make so many different statements to outside buyers, outside businesses. You said a little while ago, you know, the strategies, there's different ways of approaching and presenting what we have available, and we need to be creative. And I am very interested to find out what kind of ideas can come from, let's say, taking Reedley College or an Edo's that's building that big, massive place out there on Parlor or South Avenue. What strategies can be brought to the table with what they already have, and do some collaboration with other entities that are perhaps looking for a joint venture or something similar to what they're doing. You know, I've always believed that instead of reinventing the wheel, you know, we have Reedley College already here. We have other entities that I've already said. Why reinvent the wheel? Let's work with what we have and try to expound on that, try to see what we could bring out of that particular entity and we might be surprised. And so I'm excited to see what can come out of this and what strategies and ideas can.
Absolutely, I think Reilly College, I think your downtown, there's a lot of things that you should feel very proud of, and that are very positive aspects. It's seeing how you can take those to another level.
Yes.
And so I think there are ways you can work with the college to do make sure that they're able to expand and do the best that they possibly can. Maybe there's some special events that you can work with them too.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with downtowns. I mean, special events are a unique way for downtowns to bring people in so that they can see what's there and then say, oh, I didn't know that was there. And then they come back later and say, well, we're gonna go to dinner, or that shop's there, or whatever else. And those are usually not big ticket items, but they're things that especially small cities and mid-sized cities can do to really take what you have and take it to another level. So I think you're spot on in terms of there's a lot of things that you should feel good about. You have some challenges. You just need to acknowledge that and understand that, but really work with what you have and make it better.
So because this is a study session, a couple things I did want to bring up to you, Barry, as you're putting your plan together, to keep in mind. One, we're one of the few places in the area that is a new federal opportunity zone. We have some land in the opportunity zone. I think that's going to be critically important as we move forward. We did, through the Five Cities Partnership, just hear a presentation on what the Central Valley Community Foundation was going to try to do with the opportunity zones and some investment there. I know this is all very fresh and new, and the feds are still making the regs on this, but I do think it's important to know that in our industrial park, we do have some of those zones. Also, because we are considered a disadvantaged community, we are now, the CPUC has re-upped the PG&E economic development rate decrease. So companies who are either going to go out of business or who are considering California but may go somewhere else, they'll immediately get a 25% discount for 5 years on their electric rates. It is not for restaurants, as we've recently found out. It's mainly for industrial uses. But I think that's a really important one as we look at companies coming in, or, as you mentioned, the existing businesses that we have, if they're suffering, if they're struggling. So that's definitely one I wanted to point out. And then a couple of things that I thought was really important for you to know and for your staff to know as you're helping us put the plan together. We often hear the phrase rooftops drive retail. And we have several hundred homes that within the past few years have been mapped out. Some of them have been sold and we're just waiting for sticks to be put in the ground. Some of them have not been sold. I think economic development is such a fluid process. Things you expect to happen don't, and things you don't expect to happen do. And so a property that's been mapped out for probably over a decade, we might finally see some movement on because the original owner is getting back into the mix as everything is reverting back to him. And that's a mixed-use, commercial, multifamily, single-family, retail, you name it, it's part of that development. And so I think that's a good opportunity. The other really neat thing that's happening just right now is a piece of property on the far edge of town has just been annexed in. Our LAFCO approved the annexation of 12 acres, and I might be off by an acre or two there. I'm waiting for Rob to nod. Close enough. is being annexed in. I think that is prime acreage, and interestingly enough, the purchasers of that parcel are not interested in holding on to more than maybe 2 or 3 acres of it. They want to just sell it off, and so if we can find the right people, that property is across from one of, or if not the biggest employer in town. I mean, I'm thinking hotel would be great, all sorts of good stuff. And I'm hoping that's also a catalyst or a driver for some of the other property owners on the other part of town, the other side of town, where we've been trying to get them to annex that land in. You know, the first ones out to shoot are going to make the most profit. And so I think we have an opportunity to sort of bring these together, this new property being annexed in, the desire to annex the other parcels in, see if we can have some movement going. So I think that's critically important as well. And what we have that a lot of other cities don't, as you are looking at retailers that might want to be here, we have a wastewater treatment plant that right now is only operating at about half of its full capacity. So we built a brand new wastewater treatment plant, 5 million gallon a day plant. We're running at about 2.5 million gallons a day, and I'm waiting to see if Russ is nodding or okay. Whew, my stats have been right today. I think that's critically important, because if you go to some of our neighboring jurisdictions, there are businesses they cannot bring in if they produce too much wastewater. We also have an ample clean water supply, and we have got really solid good infrastructure in the ground in most parts of the city, with good pressures, because we've taken care of the needs of that with a brand new above ground water storage tank. We have this brand new Manning Bridge, so trucks can pass over it without falling into the river. I think we just have some really solid things going on in Reedley that are going to be important to companies that are looking for new places to expand.
Absolutely. So. And I think infrastructure is a really important piece to make sure that you've got that in place. And so I think sometimes cities fail to do that. And so I think when you're looking at doing infrastructure and CIP projects, and my wife was a public works director for many, many, many years, and so she's built a lot of capital projects. It's making sure that when you're doing your capital improvement projects and your programs, make sure that you also have an eye to doing things that make sense from an economic development standpoint. That's something that we always encourage and put in the plan.
Well, from that angle, I would say that we have, close your ears, we have a very wise forward-looking council. And we have had a wise and forward-looking council for decades. As I mentioned to you earlier, Mr. Solano's been on this council for 30 years, so you can see these wise decisions that were made decades ago are coming to roost in a very positive way for Reedley in today's day and age. As a matter of fact, most of the council members here have been on council and have made these tough decisions over the years. One of the things that I don't want to forget to tell you is that almost unanimously, we have a pro-smart development planning commission and council. And that is something that is critically important to developers, because the last thing they want to do when they stand up here to get their CUP or have their map approved or something is to end up on the losing side of a 3-2 vote. That's not to say that everything that is development related gets approved or gets unanimously approved, because I think our planning commission, and I know our council, looks for the wise investment, not the cheap and quick investment. Mm-hmm. And in that respect, maybe Walmart, you know, it's water under the bridge and we move forward from there. Maybe it's a good thing we didn't get it. Maybe it's a bad thing we didn't get it, but it is what it is. So I think moving forward, you'll find our council will ask lots of questions. Our planning commission will ask lots of questions. They'll look at the ancillary impacts of development, but development that's come forward that's been done right, I think generally gets pretty unanimous support. Mm-hmm.
One more thing I wanted to mention. We have UC Kearney Ag Center. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. It's about 4 miles from here, and they do a lot of research and development in the ag industry and brings in people from South Africa, from Britain, from France, all over the world, basically to do research here close to us. So that's another area, I think, that might benefit from your hotel idea. Because I know in the past they've actually rented homes for people that are coming and going from UC Kearney.
I think I drove by it on the way in.
Yes, I'm sure you did. I don't know if you realized it was there, but I just
I saw this, and thought it was kind of interesting to see the sign, but.
I just wanted to bring that up, that there is a lot of people coming and going from there, coming to visit and see what research is being done, and also coming from other areas to do the research.
And I think those are all positives, and I think you just need to be able to gather all that information and be able to tell that story and paint that picture. I think it's really important.
Yeah. So we do have a lot of assets. The one we don't have is the 99 corridor. But
You know, it's interesting that you brought that up, Councilmember Fassi. UC Kearney Ag Research, they're associated with, the UC system, but Davis in particular, or Berkeley. And then we have the USDA research. So we have both federal, state, and
they're right down the street.
Some phenomenal research that's going on worldwide, as a matter of fact, research that's done just in our backyard. Mm-hmm. To that extent, one of the things when a couple of my staff and I met with the UC Kearney Ag Research Center director just to make sure they're comfortable with what we're doing as a city. They were very concerned about sort of greenbelt space between the city of Parlier and the city of Reedley. Do they need to eventually be looking at a different place because of our expansion and Parlier's expansion, et cetera? And so we really made a commitment through our general plan that was approved by council that we would not extend too far on that side of the river. As a matter of fact, given some issues with the irrigation district on that side of the river, we have no plans for the next probably decade to expand on that side of the river. So that's going to be important, because right now it looks like there's a lot of prime land over there, but we know how important that UC Kearney Research Center is, and we don't want them to feel like they're infringed upon in any way. So
it's good to know.
Yeah. Any final thoughts for Barry? And I will even put it out there. Specific things you want him to look at, areas you want him to look at.
My only thing is, I want to come down with something where we can have a fresh approach to people that has industry and residential or retail to offer the city. The old saying goes, you can keep throwing the same old thing at them every time and you're going to get the same answer. So we've got to look at, a different approach, because we are unique where we're at, and we have to sell them on being 12 miles off that freeway. We have to sell them on being in this area. And so I think that's the thing I'm interested in, is maybe a fresh approach, the way we look at talking to prospective people that's going to be coming to the community. I think that's the thing that we really have to concentrate on, because if you don't show them a new light, it's just going to be a dark hole, same thing that you've dealt with. And the only one I can bring to mind is the first thing they say is you don't have 40,000 people to draw from, and that's Target's one of them. So I think you've got to sell them on being in a location that doesn't have a city limits that says 40,000 people on it. You've got to sell them that the general vicinity will support that. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a unique thing. There's not a Target between Visalia and Clovis. And there's nothing in between for a building like Target. Even if it's a size down, but we have one of our biggest issues here, and I'll give you a little example. I worked in Visalia for a number of years. I bought my clothes before I left Visalia because I couldn't buy them in this city. Mm-hmm. I had nowhere to purchase them. And so I would just go shopping before I come home. And that was kind of a bad, because if I got home at 5:00, stores were closed. And I think it's a mindset that we've got to get our business community also wrapped around. So it's just a different way I think we're going to have to go about approaching the sell of people coming into this community.
Again, I think it goes back to, you need to understand who you are and what you can be. And but you're not going to force Target to do something. And so Target really is in a very reactive mode right now. They're not doing very much new store development. They're trying to figure out what size store they should be, where they want to be right now. So they're just, same thing with Costco. And you know, Costco has a certain parameter, a threshold they have in terms of a trade area with a certain population. They're not going to deviate from that. You can talk to your blue in the face, and you're just not going to get them to go. So again, it's my comment earlier when I first kind of started off is, it still kind of comes back to market demand. You need to show how you can attract that retailer or that restaurant and show them that their customer base is going to be there and that they're going to be successful. And there's a lot of things that go into looking at that. But if they, I'll use Whole Foods as an example. And we had a couple of communities that wanted a Whole Foods. They wanted the new 365 store. And we've done a couple of those, but now they got bought by Amazon and they're really not doing new stores right now. But they want 100,000 people within a 10-minute drive time. They want 35% of those people to have college degrees. They want an average household income level of 80,000 or more. And if you don't have that, you're not going to check those boxes, and you're not even getting in the running. And so we had worked for Morgan Hill and tried to show them a location. They have a huge daytime population. They have income levels. They have college education. They have a lot of success in terms of retail there. But they had a trade area of 55,000 in 10-minute drive time. and we tried to talk about the daytime population, that people make purchases before they go back to San Jose or wherever they're from, but we couldn't convince them. And so, you know, we're now talking to a different grocery user about going in this development, but you still need to be a little bit realistic, and I'm about as creative as you can be in terms of how you can market stuff and package things and all stuff, but sometimes you just need to be realistic. About 85% of every client that we do work for, the first thing they say is, well, you know, we think we can get Trader Joe's. And I said, no, you can't get Trader Joe's. It's just, and I know them very, very well. I worked for Monrovia for, I left there 20 years ago. We spent 4 years convincing them to open a store there. We actually moved their corporate headquarters there, and we moved the store. And I know their folks really, really well. They've just told me, they go, you know, California is not a priority for us right now, and we're doing infill locations in certain very high-dense areas of the Bay Area, L.A. County, Orange County. They can make more money opening new stores, new Trader Joe's in Idaho or Texas for a lot less money, and they can make just as much money. So you just need to be kind of realistic and understand that reality.
Yeah, you know, I'm hearing everything that's being said, and, you know, maybe we can't have a Costco, we can't have a Walmart or, you know, a big chain store like that, but maybe we could do something for, maybe have a just distribution center for a Costco, for a weekend, and we can push it by saying, well, you know, your trucks can come in and out so much quicker, so much less gas, so much less waiting, so much less, you know, time is money, right? So your trucks can come in, load up, and they're gone, you know, because it's not a busy city like you go into Los Angeles, even Fresno. There's so many, you know, being creative and strategic and trying to find different ways to sell it. And
well, so as I drove around with Nicole when I was up here the last time, and I think you have some very unique and kind of international type companies that have come here and made a presence here. And so they were very successful, and they found a way to do it. You know, there's a strong possibility some others, it's just kind of trying to find that fit, but then it kind of goes back down to again, too. You've got to have property owners that are willing to do something and find that right location and that property. And when somebody does a new development project, they're not only looking at where they want to be, but then ultimately they're doing a pro forma, and it has to make economic sense. If it's a developer, he has to get a proper return on their investment, and they do a lot of due diligence to figure out that whether they're able to achieve that or not, and so that's really important to understand that in the process.
I like your idea too of engaging our property owners to maybe do some joint venture, long term, you know, buy sell type of deals. I think that might be appealing to some of our holdout owners that have not allowed anything to go on to their properties.
You know, in California is and I've lived in California now for 28 years, and I grew up in the Midwest, and it was a little bit, it's a different environment. California is it can be cutting edge, it can be bleeding edge, but you need to be creative and try to figure out things. And in California, you kind of usually leads the effort, and so I think looking in and being open-minded and being creative and working with property owners, working with existing businesses, that's what will make a community successful.
Good. Any last comments?
No, just that I know we tried many times and done different things to get tourism over here. I remember the Opera House was going to bring buses in, and we even did a video trying to get businesses to come in. And so I know, and then a while back when the taco trucks started coming in, they was kind of upset because of the taco trucks, and now the taco trucks are very popular. You see a lot of people hanging around the taco trucks that are there to eat with their families. And so I have had people ask me why we don't have Spanish movie theater here too, because our population is what, 78 maybe percent Hispanic now, and they don't have a place to go, and I said that many times for entertainment. So, but we used to have a movie theater, a Spanish movie theater here in Reedley, and we used to have one in Dinuba, and they were real popular. Even us as little kids, we used to go to the Spanish movies. We didn't understand that much, but we enjoyed their comedies and some of their horror movies, and they were really spooky. And so I think, you know, if we try and look at maybe some of the, that's why Track Factory to You was up here on the top of the list, because a lot of our Hispanic families, because they do work in ag, so they don't make a lot of money, but they enough money to survive, and they go to stores like Factory to Us, and it's mm-hmm. here at the top of the list, so that should tell us something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to look at that also, that kind of with our mm-hmm. clientele we mm-hmm. want to mm-hmm. help out. So that's it.
Okay. Good. Barry, anything last comments you need from us? Or?
No, thank you very much.
Well, I turn it back over to you then, Mayor.
Okay. Is there another from the public? Any comments? Anybody want to say anything? Okay, then. Thank you very much, and we'll adjourn the meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Mm-hmm.